Hey, folks, welcome to the next episode of The Main Scoop. I'm Greg Lotko, and I've got Dan Newman here, my co-host on The Main Scoop. Good to see you again.
It is good to be here, Greg. It's always good to be with you.
Like being in person. A lot better than kind of going across the web there.
You mean after, you know, 3 or 4 years of not being out there and being on a lot of Zoom meetings, we are all clamoring?
No, I'm not talking about pandemic. I'm just thinking about, you know, our busy schedules and traveling. We don't always get to do this in person.
It is good to see you.
It's very important for people to connect, my humble opinion. I think you develop a much greater rapport. You develop much more understanding of each other. And this is kind of a different topic for us, but I think it kind of builds on that. It's all about people. It's all about our differences, our similarities. We're going to be talking today about diversity, equity, and inclusion. So when you think DEI, what comes to mind?
Yeah, I think thought process here is really about, you know, building and bringing together the most capable teams. It was about, you know, how do you think about an organization, think about the best talent, opening doors to new potential, and how do you grow an organization? You know, there's a lot of, we have a guest today that's going to probably provide a whole lot more construct to it. But over the last few years, it's been front and center. The attention that it's given to the world and to industries is opening up the aperture of how you think about growing your company, thinking about the kinds of talent, the kinds of people, the kinds of communities, organizations, and of course, what is going to enable you to grow by not necessarily using the same thinking that you've used historically.
I definitely would agree with you. I think our differences are what make us not only unique as individuals, but it's what makes teams more powerful, right? When you're open to the idea of including everybody, hearing what they think. It doesn't mean that you go with one constituency or another or one voice, but often when we have the opportunity to hear from different perspectives, we come to a better decision, which is more whole, more comprehensive, more inclusive, and I know it drives better business value, but we do have an expert with us here. So let me welcome to The Main Scoop the founder and CEO of the Musai Group, Dr. Gloria Chance. So you've heard us two guys here talking diversity. I imagine you're kind of versed. Can you tell us a bit about the Musai Group and then tie into, you know, what is it you guys are talking about and, you know, what's your experience?
Sure. Thank you so much. Thank you all for having me today. I have to say that I'm really proud to be talking to two white guys about this topic. Seriously, and it brings me pleasure because it's so important to have all people in this game. The Musai Group is about being human. I was a CIO for all of my career, primarily in banking and healthcare. And I've worked across other industries as a consultant, like utilities, gas, a whole bunch of other ones. And so what I found in my work and why I created the Musai Group is that I was always very creative and I could come up with just solutions and things that were industry, like serious industry disruptions. And so I wanted to understand when I retired early from banking at 46, I was like, well, how does that work? And ironically, the way creativity works, so you guys were talking about thinking, is it works in the right side of the brain. And so that's the part of the brain that we use the least because it's where all of our creativity, our joy, our emotional intelligence, and actually how we look at diversity is processed on that side of the brain. And so my work in the Musai Group is about the power of the imagination to transform how we think and how we see things. And so we combine art, science, tech, and psychology at an intersection of what is it like to be human with the social issues that we're going through today. So we're not a diversity firm, we're actually a creative thinking firm. But I believe that diversity in my research is about change management and how do we change the way that we think.
I think it's interesting that, you know, a couple of words you used there. You were talking about transformation, and I know we've had this buzzword for years that organizations need to transform, whether it be their business offerings, their way of thinking. But often you'll find in companies or organizations that people will tend to look for confirmation or affirmation. They tend to try to fit in. And they can lose part of that identity. But the real transformative stuff doesn't just come from saying I want to be transformative or right. I want to be different. It's from opening up, creating an environment where people can participate, they feel comfortable talking about things differently or having different observations. And that is the part that opens up the creativity. I think the left side is when you're thinking, oh, this is what it means for me to be in this company or in this organization.
It's logic. It's logical, right? It's like, how do I do data? How do I do processes? That's what, and at work, that's really what we think we're here to do, right? Is just to do step one, two, three, and that's what the left side of the brain does.
Or model a behavior.
Exactly,
of those that we
exactly.
saw were successful.
Yeah, like in leadership, back when we all grew up in leadership, I'm not trying to say how old you are, but seriously, it was a lot about how do you mirror like the white man who was the leader, because back then that was pretty much, at least for me, the model.
Yeah, as a left-handed person, they tend to say I'm very right brain. So I think, it's always been more about creativity, and then the data logic stuff actually is the stuff I have to work a little bit harder at.
Oh, but, interesting.
Yeah, and obviously I don't know sometimes those kinds of things, how true is it an old wife's tale or is it a real thing, like that mm-hmm. a left and a right brain and righties and left brains. But, you know, you heard us kind of in the preamble, you know, we're trying to sort of depict and explain. As you said, you're not a DEI firm, but you're focused as part of the strategy and creative. This is, you know, the environment's changing. It's evolving.
Right.
You know, I'm seeing headlines coming out right now of companies shifting programs, moving away from programs. Although during the last several years, I think companies also opened up, as I said, the aperture to how being more diverse can help. Kind of how are you seeing the whole landscape evolve right now? Because it is mm-hmm. changing. The rhetoric's changing.
Right.
The conversation's
right.
changing. I mean, where are we at?
Yeah, so let me go back to something Greg was going towards around transformation. So the first thing in this work you have to do as a human being is be self-aware. Anyone who knows me knows I always talk about that as a psychologist. And ironically, during the pandemic, what I found in working with companies, I would do town halls with CEOs, with their executives, about their fears and what, you know. So for the first time during the pandemic, it kind of opened up the ability of us to talk about fears and emotions and struggles in a real big way in corporations that we had never done before. And so in doing that, what I found is that most people, I don't know if you can guess the number one reason that they were struggling during the pandemic.
Connecting with people, I would think.
No, it was their kids.
Oh.
They, because
oh,
they,
how the individual, I was,
well, yeah,
I was thinking on a corporate
just,
level.
You're with your kids 24/7. Where if
right.
you work yeah. a full-time job, you're away, you mm-hmm. travel, you probably kind of see your kids like a small, way, way smaller percentage.
Well, and you can get that interruption.
Well, exactly. And so that was the biggest struggle. And then seeing their kids mirror the behaviors that they were taught, right, by their parents, actually was like a mirror to say, maybe I'm not that great at this. And so that was fascinating. So self-awareness is really important when you talk about transformation and when you talk about diversity. So when I work with a lot of companies around leadership development, and diversity comes into play because it really is a leadership tool. And I think when you're seeing now people reacting to that now it's a bad word, DEI is a bad word. Whenever there is a social event in the world, we will see a big shift in human behavior. And the pandemic was our social event. You know, if you look at back in the Dark Ages, what came after the Dark Ages was the Renaissance. Because whenever there's a major virus or war or whatever, we always, as human beings, we have to adapt. And that's what we've done during the pandemic. So the DEI kind of initially everybody wanting to give all of this money and then pulling back, like literally in the literature, almost no one has met their goals. Because what corporations do is they come out and say, we're going to do this by 2025, right? Mm-hmm. But what we kind of know as humans, if I tell you I'm going to lose 20 pounds in 30 days, are you going to come back and check?
No, I'm not going to check with you.
Well, totally, right? So you're not going to. It's the same thing with DEI. That's one of those measurements that no one goes back and checks. So mm-hmm. it's kind of almost okay in a weird kind of way to say, oh, well, we're just going to get rid of the program. And ironically enough, while in the U.S., black people, they tend to be the race. And by the way, every country has their sort of wound, their people wound. Like in Canada, it's the indigenous. And in the U.S., it's black people. And ironically, in diversity programs, although they've laid off a huge amount of people, Black people are less than 4% of the executives who run DEI programs. And so we have, you know, so the laying off, it gives, like, from a numbers perspective, doesn't necessarily impact, like, the marginalized people as much as it impacts the industry and kind of the big blinking word that people are scared and they're running away.
So you talked about a major event happening and we adapt. I actually want a question on that. I don't know that I believe it's an adaptation as much as a reevaluation of what are my priorities going to be, because I don't feel like the change you see is always an adaptation to the event. It's more of a reevaluation of, hey, what's important to me? What are my priorities going to be, and where are I focused? Would you agree
with
that?
So what I would say, Greg, is that is an example, what you just said, of projection. So that is what you would do. So you would think through it and reassess. But what happens is, if you look at the literature and what's happening now, mental illness is becoming the number one issue in corporate America right now, across all generations. And by the way, generations are introducing a whole other level of diversity, because we used to think about it. We would live and we had our parents and maybe our grandparents, and they would die by the time you were out of college, right? Because now the life expectancy is longer. We have five generations working and seven living. And so with that, just that alone is impacting the way that people have to adapt. So the mental illness is now happening across mostly Gen Z because of everything that they've been through with the pandemic, et cetera. And then we have all the other generations, particularly Gen Xers, who are our leaders.
It's very interesting you point that out, though, because I think part of the mental illness, and you've done the research. This is like an assessment of a father of three children, one that's actually 22 that grew up, didn't have a phone till she was maybe eighth or ninth grade. Mm-hmm. Second one got a phone in fifth grade.
Right.
Third one's been glued to the iPad.
Exactly.
And what I'm saying,
like,
though, is like
one or two. Yeah.
Like, but everyone at this table grew up and basically went to school, and we only interfaced with the people we were at school with.
Exactly. Yeah.
I wasn't in college until Facebook came out, and some of us never went to school in any period. And my point is, like, how much does that sort of, you're talking five generations, some that literally had 20 years of career before phones and Blackberries were a thing.
Exactly. So therein lies the problem, right? Because how do you even communicate with each other, right, with that big disparity? But what you just brought up is really key to diversity. It's about how the way we see the world is based on how we grew up and when we grew up.
And
how your ancestors. Yeah. So what mental model did your parents give you? Well, they gave you the model that their parents gave them. And the further we go back, the less education you have, the less, you know, like you said, mingling with other people. So you tend to be in homogenous areas. Like, you grew up in New York, Greg. Mm-hmm. I grew up in New York, but we grew up in different parts of New York. He's in Long Island. I was Brooklyn. So a totally different, same state, but a totally different world. And so because my parents they actually worked on farms. They weren't slaves, but their parents were. And so when you look at that, and we moved to New York, or they moved to New York for a better, like most people did then, to get a better job. But that is really key, and that's the essence of the work that we do at the Musai Group, is to talk about, you know, the mental models that you grew up with, because until you address those, you can't change the way that you lead around diversity. And by the way, diversity should be integrated. It shouldn't be a separate topic. When we go into organizations, we go into their policies and procedures, and we help them change wording, imagery, all of those things. So then it's a lived experience versus, oh, we got to talk about diversity today.
So that's a couple of things I wanted to bring together. So whether it's an adaptation or a reaction, and I get that I may be projecting, it is the way I think about it. I get the idea of companies have set goals, and they may or may not have had intent behind hitting those goals. What I struggle with, what I worry about, is I feel there's certain companies or organizations, more often than I'd like to see, that focus on the goal more than the intent.
Right.
So I always get concerned when I'm talking to people about this topic, and right away they start with spouting stats. You know, we've done this many sessions, we have this many people here, there, or, and it's like, well, that's not what it's about. You have to create the environment, and it has to be pervasive.
Right.
And it is about us talking about hard truths. Right. It is about us learning about ourselves and those around us. And you inadvertently touched on something that you said, you know, you were talking about mental diversity challenges, mm-hmm. illnesses. My daughter actually just won Miss Colorado 3 weeks ago. I had no idea I was going to talk about that during this. But her platform, her community service initiative is, it's okay to be not okay.
Right.
So her whole point is to talk about, it's okay to feel bad. It's, mm-hmm. you know, but if you talk about it, if you focus on it, if you get help, if you're vulnerable and you learn, mm-hmm. that's what helps you not only get through it, but it's important for others to be aware that there are others mm-hmm. like us. And I actually think one of the other things that it's kind of an interesting topic and a double-edged sword, mm-hmm. diversity is about realizing everybody has something that's unique
or
absolutely. Different. Right?
Yeah. I mean, I remember the slide that I do, which shows like, you know, you have a regular face, and we had a masking. Mm-hmm. We talked about unmasking, but, you know, all of us walk around with our faces, right? We see each
other. Our public persona.
Exactly. But underneath, there could be a gazillion things going on. And just learning that skill set to recognize that the person standing in front of you is a human being and is important and may be hurting, and maybe you are that person that day that can help them realize something, overcome something, or just, you know, it's so important to
by
have
recognizing
that human,
them, by
exactly,
seeing them, by hearing
seeing them
and listening.
Is the main thing. Yeah. And so one of the first things, so last night, Greg, we did a mentoring thing, and one of the things in making a strong community stronger, where we're wanting to move, or at least I'm wanting to move, is to put things in action, to really give people tools as a toolkit, because how diversity should look in organization is, how do we have governance over this? How do we implement the things into our policies? And how do we know when they show up? So, for example, I have a client, and I can say their name, the Giving Institute. They're a member organization, so there's about somewhere between 100, 200 companies, and all the CEOs get together to, you know, forward the philanthropy industry, right? And so what we've done over the past 3-4 years is we've integrated diversity into their policies and their practices, so they meet quarterly, and they're usually 2-3 day conferences. We've embedded into their programming, into everything, the foundation of how do we make people feel included.
Mm-hmm.
So most organizations don't start there.
There's only one word I don't like in that.
What?
And I hear people say that all the time, and I know you don't mean it that way. You said, how do we make people feel included? I don't want people to feel included. I want people to be included,
well, yeah, but you have to start with the feeling. So if you really talk to a lot of marginalized people, the first, when they walk into an environment, the first thing
they don't feel
the
like
first
they
thing they say, they'll say, I don't feel welcome. Like if people don't come up. And so we actually put guidelines together to say, this is how we receive people. This is how we welcome people. These are the things we're going to do. And one of our measurements is, this might sound really corny, but it's how many new people said they felt welcomed without prompting.
Mm.
And that small metric is huge. And it's turned around the way that people are seeing the organization and the how the people inside of the organization feel about their work.
Well, one of the things that, you know, we studied and in several of the books I wrote, we focused on culture being a bigger driver of change than the products and technologies themselves, the company's
exactly.
culture. And what you're sort of alluding to is that, you know, when you have the diversity and the culture isn't created where everyone feels, then that the ship doesn't move as quickly. And
it becomes restricted. People get left behind. And so what I'm loving about making a strong community stronger is that we're not stopping. Yeah. And the Giving Institute isn't stopping. And other people we're working with are not stopping, because this is important work.
Yeah, so I've you know, we have a couple of minutes left, Dr. Chanson. I appreciate you sitting down with us here. It's very different than us diving into the tech we love to get into the weeds, but you have a background as an executive in tech.
Yes.
I would love to get your, you know, thoughts for our audience and our community about kind of where these things intersect. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we, you know, we started kind of talking about, you know, the industry really went all in on kind of a really defined DEI movement. Now you're hearing some, like you said, change or some pullback, but you're also pointing out that it wasn't necessarily as impactful as a statistically to what you were saying about quotas as it was about sort of posturing, you know?
Right.
And so as you sort of see these things all converge, what does the tech industry do? You've got seven generations, you know, five in the work. You've got the diversity of thought. You've got language barriers. You've got geographic. You've got the world working together. You're seeing in the markets now.
Exactly.
But you're seeing in the markets now, there is no U.S. Global, and Europe. Everything is global. Like, how do you advise companies to think about all this, move it forward, and, you know, maybe take some of the, you know, definition away and build some of the culture so that it's inherent in these companies?
Yeah, I really think that the DEI industry needs to move away from calling itself DEI, only because the word's been bastardized. And whenever you have blinking words, what happens with the brain is when certain people hear it, then we have situations, right? And we have drama. So I think that the DEI industry needs to transform, that it does need to shift in how we talk about it and how we see it. And I do believe it's a psychological and a human issue, particularly now as we have so many different people living. Particularly in the tech space, I believe with AI. So I work in the, there's actually something called the imagination age that I'm working in. But most people don't know about it because it's a blip on the radar. It's the time between the information age to AI. So the information age is about content and how we look at shifting how we get information, how we consume it, how we develop it. Information being tech as well, right? Because it's the processes. So when we look at AI, the biggest challenge that the tech industry has is if you're not diverse enough, your product's probably going to cause more harm than good. Because, you know, working in banking, we dealt with this all the time. Because of the laws and discriminatory practices in banking and housing, et cetera, we know that people who are marginalized, they don't get the same treatment, et cetera. So if we take those models and we just transport them over to AI, then we're taking the same problems into AI. But what's really going to be happening in the real world is we're going to have all these generations living, and the tech, there's going to be a mismatch because we haven't included how we need to deal with all the different generations and how they think and what they need.
All right. Let me wrap this one up, okay?
You on it?
Yeah. So I started this by talking about that it was a little bit of a departure from what we had talked about relative to tech. But the reality is the most important component in technology is people.
Right.
It's people that develop this tech. It's people that use it every day. And it's high time we had a conversation about this. And I think we can all agree that inclusivity, people both feeling that they can participate, contribute, are welcome there, and then actually being afforded the opportunity, helps us accomplish more things for business and the world. So thrilled with having you here.
Thanks for joining us. My pleasure.
Again, I think that was a great Main Scoop. Make sure you tune in and see us next time on the Main Scoop.